This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For a long time, Dinklage considered himself a man of the theater, a downtown, off-Broadway kind of guy. And he had some good roles in small films. But then along came HBO's adaptation of Game of Thrones, and he was cast in the role of Tyrion Lannister.
Yes, Father. I'm guilty. Guilty? Is that what you want to hear?
You admit you poisoned the king?
No. Of that I'm innocent. I'm guilty of a far more monstrous crime. I'm guilty of being a dwarf.
You are not on trial for being a dwarf.
Oh, yes, I am. I've been on trial for that my entire life.
Dinklage, who was 4.5 feet tall, gave Tyrion a towering presence, and he won 4 Emmys for his performance. But Game of Thrones ended this year, and Dinklage has gone back to his roots on stage.
I see. I've done 12 shows in the past 8 days. I'm fried. Okay. Gotcha.
No problem.
Dinklage is the lead in a new adaptation of Cyrano, the classic play about a romantic who tries to win the woman he loves, despite his extraordinarily large and unattractive nose. Dinklage came in recently to talk with the staff writer Michael Shulman, and they spoke about how he connects with the character of Cyrano.
I never felt a connection with the nose of it all. As a person who looks like me, whenever I would watch a version of Cyrano, I would just think about, that's an actor and a fake nose. And we wanted to really strip it all down and get to the core of what it really is about, which is everybody's capacity to not feel worthy of love, whether you have a giant nose or not.
He is very, very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yes. He is the most beautiful man I've ever seen.
I see. Have you spoken?
Never.
How do you know he loves you?
I know.
How can you love a man if you've never heard his voice?
I don't know, but I know that I do.
What if he's an idiot?
Then I will die.
It's really interesting how the show handles the nose part of Cyrano's story because, as you said, you don't wear a prosthetic nose, but other characters refer to his nose as like
we refer to it twice.
Right.
At the top.
Right, yeah. But in the audience, I guess we're left to sort of assume that they're talking in a maybe sideways way about your height or were you a part of the decision about that? I mean, how did you all discuss how you wanted to handle the nose aspect of it and how it would be presented?
Right. I mean, it does present sort of a puzzle because I'm not wearing a nose and I am the height I am. So people are going, you could feel it. They're a bit confused, but that's okay, I think. Let them follow you down the rabbit hole. And but again, I don't think it has anything to do with my height either. I think Scott Stanglin, who is my understudy, he's 6 feet tall or something, and he can play the part probably as good or as better than I can.
Has he gone on?
No, not yet.
So we'll never know.
So it sort of has nothing to do with any of that, really. I was just cast because they wanted me for it, and I wanted to try something I've never done before.
Are you in love?
Why me? Yes, yes, I dare.
With whom?
Oh, only the most intelligent, beautiful creature.
With whom?
With such a description, you have to ask.
Whom do you love?
Have you ever wanted something so badly you cannot breathe? Have you ever loved someone?
The adapter and director, Erica Schmidt.
Who I should say is your wife.
Years ago, got in touch with the band The National because their music is so romantic and filled with yearning and sometimes heartbreaking. And Matt's lyrics are so poetic, much like Cyrano's words, that it was such a natural fit, and they responded immediately, and they wrote these beautiful songs.
Many people probably have not seen you sing before, but you were in a punk band in the 90s.
Yeah.
Please tell me about your punk band.
We were punks, but we didn't play punk rock. A couple friends from Columbia and a couple friends from where I went to school in Bennington, Vermont. We got together and we just drank too much and played the old CBGBs, and we had a lot of fun. We had a following, but our following was kind of like progressive rock. It was all guys. What's the point of being in a rock band if there's no ladies, if you don't have any groupies? But I never intended to be in a band. It was just fun for me. And
the group was called Wizzy?
Wizzy, yeah.
Who came up with the name?
I think our drummer Jim did. But I felt I was being like a dilettante. I felt like they were all real musicians, and they still are. And I was just slumming it, being, you know, I don't know, just having fun. And I don't think that's fair.
What were some of your songs called?
I think this New Yorker radio hour is too clean for
no,
some of the
not.
Song titles.
No, it's not.
Well, we had...
That makes me only want to know the song titles more.
Well, one was called Dick of the Party, about being a loser drunk at a party. So I'll leave it there.
So speaking of your many talents, you now have your own production company. And one of the things that you have done is this HBO film, My Dinner with Hervé. And you play the French-born dwarf actor Hervé Villechaize, who is known for playing Nick Knack in the James Bond film The Man with the Golden Gun, and even more so for saying Duplain on the 70s TV show Fantasy Island. So this project was 14 years in the making, is that right?
Yeah.
And so the writer-director of the film, Sacha Gervasi, had met Hervé years earlier as a journalist, and they had this crazy night out on the town in Los Angeles. And then what happened?
Well, Hervé killed himself a couple days after Sasha said goodbye to him. So Sasha realized it was sort of a suicide note, which is in true Hervé style. The man did nothing quietly. he was something else. And I got to know people in his life. He's so deeply loved, and he burned so brightly. So, you know, and it was just the first time I've ever played somebody who actually existed, mm-hmm. which was a real, really humbling, but also...
Well, not only did he exist, but he was, I'm sure...
It's a complicated thing.
He was the actor with dwarfism who was most famous before you.
He wasn't really an actor, to be fair. Sorry, Hervé, I love you. He was an incredible painter.
Right.
But he just enjoyed the lifestyle of it all. We're sort of opposite in that way. I enjoy the lifestyle, but I don't go for the I don't know. I try to keep a lower profile, but I enjoy the work itself. Hervé really liked, he loved being the rock star that he was. So that's, he was guilty of that, and but no fault to him, because he was having a really good time, and he was sort of unapologetic about it,
right?
But he never really let his size define him. He wooed and he won many, many women, which I feel like, because of his size, was treated in the press like, wow, look at that. You know, it's just like, no, that wouldn't happen with anybody else who was regular size. It just was like a novelty that he was with women. Well, yeah, he was. Deal with it. Because he was charming.
So he was on TV when you were growing up in the 70s. What were your feelings about him and about, you know, representation in popular culture of dwarfism in general?
When you're 8 years old, social justice is not really entering into your biosphere there. I remember being a little bit aware that in Fantasy Island he was the sidekick and, you know, but nothing that really bothered me. But then adolescence sort of changes all that, your perspective on if you live in a unique shape, you become hyper aware of the world around you and how it reacts to you and how you engage with it. I'm not always the most politically correct person in terms of my dwarfism. I don't care, really. I think that can be damaging as well. And put up walls. Meaning, like, for example, if I see a kid and he's pointing at me and the parent has them, like, look the other way, what's that kid going to grow up into? Somebody that can't make eye contact with somebody who's 4.5 feet tall? That's sad to me. I understand it in the moment because they don't want to embarrass me. You know, what are we going to have, like, an educational seminar walking down the street with a child? You know, there's no time for that. But those little things add up to, in our DNA, in terms of how we see people unique, physically unique, and that can be destructive. I'm not an actor to, like, change the world in terms of, like, how somebody my size is presented. Mm-hmm. I'm really not. I think, because that would be putting me before the work, and I just am attracted to roles that don't, it's just bad writing to make that the dominant character trait. Right. It's not my dominant character trait. It's part of, you know, it has to be part of a complex portrait that informs other pieces of your personality. Mm-hmm. But I just know when you read a script that they just want you because it's not going to happen. If they want you just to be because the suit fits or something, you know.
So I am going to have rocks thrown at me if I don't ask you about the finale of Game of Thrones. So I'm going to do it right now.
Who throws these rocks? The New Yorker is such a peaceful
people
magazine.
On the
cartoonists?
Yeah, the cartoonists are going to
they throw pictures
me.
Of rocks.
Did you follow the fan response?
No. I mean, you're never going to make anybody happy with anything we do. Everybody's going to always have an opinion. And that means an ownership. But that means they really loved it. It's like breaking up with somebody. They get upset. And I can't speak for everybody, but my feeling is they didn't want it to end, so a lot of people got angry. This happens. Monsters are created, and you don't see it coming. We vote them into office. You know, it happens. So for everybody to get upset because they loved a character so much, and they had so much faith in that person. There were signposts all along the way
character. You're speaking, of course, of, spoiler alert, Daenerys.
Yeah.
Targaryen.
Yeah.
Took a bit of a fascist turn.
Yeah.
But
that's because, you know, what was happening all along, it added up to something. And... you know, I, you know, there are people who have named their children Khaleesi and gotten tattoos. You know, we're all tattoos on people, and you just gotta maybe wait till the season finale, the series finale, before you get that tattoo or name your golden retriever Daenerys. Like, you know, I mean, I can't help you. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Did you expect that Tyrion would survive through to the end?
No, none of us did. None of us did. We were all nervous when we got the scripts, yeah.
Now that the show is done, you have a certain amount of cultural capital that you can really spend on doing things that you want. What do you want to do with it? you have a production company where you can make whatever, you know, whatever you're interested in.
Yeah.
You probably have any, you know, I wide really, choice of roles.
Actors, they come in the ninth inning after a lot of creativity has been sparked. And I'm trying to rewind and I'm producing now and that inspires me. That sort of being on something from the ground floor, creating something with a writer or director, and that's what I'm doing now. Acting, perhaps much more selectively than I've been doing, which I think that's just a natural progression of getting older. You know, getting up at 5 a.m. in some strange location when you can be home in bed. It's that you really have to be a good project to get you there.
Since you get to rock out so much in Cyrano, is there any chance of getting Wizzy back together?
No, but I really want to make a cast album of Cyrano. That's a goal of mine. Never been on a cast album. So hopefully the band, The National, will consider that.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The actor Peter Dinklage, speaking with Michael Shulman, a staff writer at the magazine. You can read more from their interview at newyorker.com.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.